Hey everyone, welcome back to the 443 Security Simplified. I'm your host, Mark LaLiberty, and joining me today is not Corey Knockreiner. It is Senior Support Engineer Martin Lethbridge. Say hi, Martin.
Hi, everyone.
We are here in Manchester, UK. We just finished up with IP Expo, and we have a fun little short episode today where we'll cover some UK local news and then have a sit-down chat with Martin here about some of the things that UK residents are most concerned about when it comes to cybersecurity. So with that, let's go ahead and get started. So let's start today with the news. And this one actually comes from the UK as well.
Wait.
There was an article published just this morning about at the BBC about hackers beat university cyber defenses in 2 hours.
Whoa, that's quick.
It sounds really scary from the title, but really it comes down to a bunch of UK universities hired some pen testers or penetration testers to test their cyber defenses. And this is actually pretty common in the UK. I see quite a few articles about different organizations like the NHS or schools and universities hiring out penetration testers. And they actually put out reports of what they found publicly, which is kind of neat.
Yeah.
Usually in the States, it's pretty secretive, unfortunately.
I think after the WannaCry, that's why they have to make it everyone know about it now.
Yes. So in this case, they hired penetration testers, and the headline was it took 2 hours. But they talked about some of the things they went through. And first off, they said that their most effective approach during all this was spear phishing. And obviously, this is a big hot topic across the world. Spear phishing is a really easy way to get into a network. Even like phishing in general, something like, I think it was 92% of all cyber attacks are started with a phish is the last stat I saw.
Yep.
Now, of course, 93% of stats are just made up on the fly, so I could be wrong.
Would you ever make anything up?
No. It was something like that. And then spear phishing, which takes it to a whole nother level, is even more effective too, right? So what are some things that like people have to worry about with spear phishing? Obviously, they tailor emails to look like they came from someone that you know, going to someone you know, and they may contain malicious links or malicious attachments too. In this case, they were saying that they were using spear phishing to conceal the attack and then downloading malware, which is pretty common, right?
Yeah.
Seems like a really common type of attack, and it makes sense they'd test that.
Well, it's one of those things if they're going to get the best results. And that's what it's all about, is making money. They're out to actually get that FD, get that person where the money is, and actually try and get him to pass over the money that they want. Because that's what it's all about.
Exactly. So what are some of the things they were testing schools? Like, there's obviously sensitive information at universities, right?
Well, you've got all the PII about the students, where they live, their date of birth, what they're studying, even down to the case of probably how they're paying for their course. Because you've got to think there may be credit card numbers, bank account numbers, NI numbers. Now, maybe they're not after the money. Maybe they're after the NHS number and stuff like that. So they can actually clone that person.
Yeah.
Because there you go. Game over. I now cloned you. I now can get a bank loan. And I'm now no longer me anymore.
Student records are actually worth a lot on the dark web. We did it was probably 3 years ago now, where I went through and I built a hacking menu of the different hacks and different information you could buy on the dark web and how much it actually costs in dollars. And student records were more valuable than credit card numbers.
Would that be because students are not as, I wouldn't say savvy to computers, but more less savvy about their data and what they're doing?
It could be. I also think they're so like young and fresh in that they don't already have a credit history, so it's really easy to steal their identity accurately.
Yeah.
And you can have it for quite some time because they're young. It's not like they're already in their 60s or whatever.
And the other thing is, if they haven't got much of a credit history, it's easy for them to get a credit card and then the person doesn't know they've had a credit card against them.
Yep. So it makes sense that they're worth quite a bit and universities would really focus on keeping their students safe. So we'll probably cover this in our interview after this, but what are some things that companies can do to like protect against spear phishing? Training is probably big, right?
Oh, training is going to be huge.
And but then technical tools too, maybe?
Technical tools. I mean, look, there is so many companies out there that will actually try and actually send those sample spear phishings to see if any of their users actually pick up on it. And if they pick up on it, then they go and say, hey, dude, that was... Don't click on it. We told you not to click on it. And then they go, but I needed to click on it. But it's all about educating the users. Because at the end of the day, we are the weakest link.
Right.
You know, it's that should I click on it, not click on it, and also showing them how to actually look at that URL, look how the email's done, who's it come from, are you expecting it, and I think, like I said before, phone the person if you're not sure, you know.
Exactly. And then you've got technical tools to keep you backed up as well.
Exactly.
Especially if they're downloading malware. Like, WatchGuard, we've got, 3 layers of anti-malware engines now?
Oh, yeah. The AI AV, you've got the signature-based AV, and then APT blocker.
Yeah.
You know.
And even that shouldn't be your only defenses. You really need a full layered defense, including endpoint clients as well, to keep yourself
safe. And keep your endpoint client different to what you have on the firewall. And when I got into IT, I was brought up with security's like an onion. Thanks, mm-hmm. Shrek, for ruining that analogy. And it was always a case of you have one antivirus on your servers, a different one on your workstation, and a different one on your gateways, because not every AV can actually see the same virus. And now we're like with the firewall, you have the AI AV, you have the signature base, and then you have the sandbox.
Yep.
So don't just buy one AV, mm-hmm. buy two.
I would love to say that service X or whatever is the silver bullet that'll save you from everything.
There's a silver bullet out there?
No, there isn't.
If anyone ever tells you they have a silver bullet to save you on the internet, I think they're lying.
They're definitely lying, you really do need a layered approach to security. It's something that we practice and preach really hard here at WatchGuard, especially. And that includes endpoint agents that might not even be WatchGuard too.
Yeah.
Definitely. So, interesting news story from the UK. It seems phishing is pretty popular across the world, right?
Yeah.
And I can't imagine it's going away anytime soon. It's good that these universities are doing their tests, though.
It's here to stay, unfortunately.
Yes, until people stop clicking links.
Stop it. Stop it now. I'm allowed to beat them now.
No, not yet. All right, so I'm here today from sunshiny, not really sunshiny, Manchester, UK, with our senior sales engineer, Martin Lethbridge. Martin, say hi.
Hi, everyone.
Awesome. Martin, you want to give us an introduction to yourself? I don't think we've had you on the podcast yet, so tell us a little about you and your WatchGuard experience.
Wow. So I've been with WatchGuard about 9 years, but I've been doing WatchGuard for about 21 years now.
A long time, because we're only, 23 years
23 years old. So when WatchGuard came to the UK, they brought the box with the triangle on the front, the Firebox 100, I think it was. Mm-hmm. I still have mine. The one I got trained on, I still have it. It's great.
What is it doing now?
It's my monitor stand.
Yes.
Yeah. And I've been, obviously been with the company now 9 years. So I've seen the product grow. I was, for my sins, a version 11 beta tester. So all the ones that know did the beta testing had the shirt. I still have the shirt. So and really my role is to go and see customers, show them how to use the box, how to get the best out of the security services. Because that's one of the things. People sit there, they buy these boxes, and then they're scared to turn the stuff on. And it's not scary. You just turn it on, but you've got to turn it on in a good way. And this is what I do. I show them, I educate them, and I train them.
And you're big on Wi-Fi too, right?
Wi-Fi is my other baby. Yeah. I do love my Wi-Fi.
You've got a few Wi-Fi pineapples probably?
Three.
They're not on right now, right?
No, the white cable is how I always say to everyone when I'm in a room. Unfortunately, my partners know now that if they see me, they always turn their Wi-Fi off. But I always say, if the white cable's plugged into the laptop, then you start worrying. But no white cable. We're good.
I just checked my phone to make sure I'm not connected to GoGo in-flight right now.
He did. He did. He doesn't trust me.
Nah. You do a great job, though. So what I wanted to do was have a nice little interview with you to try and see what goes on this side of the pond. Because obviously, Corey and I, we always talk about what's happening in the States. We try and keep it a little global. But we don't get to see what the big security concerns are for people in the UK. So I felt like you'd be a great person to talk to. We can go over some of the big security concerns and threats and what people in the UK are worried about, and then how we can help them too.
Okay, so over here right now, phishing is big. Remote workers are big, keeping them safe on that side. But phishing at the moment, oh my goodness me, some of the emails now are just so good.
Right, it's no longer the, you have shipping confirmed from company.
No.
Do open.
Yeah. So right now the
sextortion.
Sextortion. Yeah. The sextortion ones are the rife ones right now.
Yeah. It's big across the board. We get that. We saw that, I think, our Q4 report, the one that just came out, we had a big sextortion campaign that we were tracking. where they'd say, hey, first they'd get your email address and password from one of the billions of breaches that are out there on the dark web.
Yeah.
And they'd say, hey, Mark, I've been sitting on your computer with this malware for the last month and, oh, I've been watching you go to naughty sites. By the way, here's a password that I stole from you as proof that I've infected your system. I turned on your webcam and I'm going to show all your friends and family if you don't spend $400 to this Bitcoin wallet.
Now that's where they're different.
Yeah.
They use pounds and sometimes euros, but I don't care about euros.
Not yet. Well, not I yet. Guess never again.
No, we're gone. We're gone. But we won't go there. I'll get in trouble.
So they do localize it here, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they do localize it. I guess they get the grammar correct and they get the spelling correct. But with me in spelling, no, I won't notice that difference.
They get the British spelling, though, the R before the E.
Well, I hope so. If not, I'll give it to one of my colleagues to read it and say, that's so wrong.
Is this a phishing email?
I do believe that's wrong. The grammar is incorrect.
And so what about like bank phishing? Is that pretty popular around here?
Banking, too? Yeah. I mean, we don't get the American ones.
Wells Fargo, Bank of America.
Yeah, I've never heard of Wells Fargo until I listened to the podcast.
Really?
Nearly. Never knew what that was. It sounded like a pharmacy to me.
I'm surprised they haven't opened up an account for you already.
They probably have. But yeah, we get like Barclays, HSBC, Lloyd's. They're the ones that we really see on that one. So
no bleed over from the US banks? So no. They know the recipients then. Like
yeah.
They know that you're based in the UK.
Yeah, they get you good on that one. I mean, the only other thing I keep seeing is, oh, the Amazon ones. Amazon vouchers. All I got to say is Amazon owes me a whole load of money. That's all I got to say.
At least based off all the info you've given them?
Well, I'm just going to say, if I've taken a note, I think they owe me about 2,000 vouchers by now. But, you know, maybe they might come up trumps and get paid.
We've been sure to, like, send them your password and, like, your favorite pet's name, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, right. Yeah. I always fill in the form because I do believe sharing is caring.
So is hopefully phishing trainees pretty popular over here too, right?
Yeah, we're slowly seeing it. I mean, obviously with us now, we've got the DNS watch and we put that educational piece in there. And you know what? I love the educational piece because users, when they get the deny message, what's the first thing they do? They phone up IT. Yep. IT don't want to hear that. I've been blocked. Did you read what it said? No. Try clicking on the play link and then see what happens.
Yep.
Education is, you know, I love the educational piece because it helps, you know, them educate their own users.
Yeah. You don't want to I guess some people probably do want to beat their users, but you don't want to beat them. That's not the proper
way. I worked in support for 12 years. You always want to beat your users.
Yeah.
That's wrong.
But it isn't always the best way of approaching it, especially with phishing. Like we always try and say, go with the carrot instead of with the stick. So a little bit of training when they make a mistake and click a phishing email is a great way to make sure they don't click another phishing email.
Exactly. And I think they learn from it as well. Mm-hmm. So that's what I believe in. And then also the big thing now is home workers.
Yeah, so home workers, is that pretty popular over here?
Massively. I mean, I'm starting to see more and more companies either A, trusting their users to actually work from home maybe 1 or 2 days a week. But I mean, for me, I wherever I am is where I work.
Right.
But it's not just that. It's also like right now, we're in a hotel room. So many people travel. I mean, right now I'm in Manchester, I live down south, I'm always in a hotel room. And that you have to keep your users safe when they're outside of the network.
So what are some of the risks that people might face when they're working remotely, especially like from a hotel?
Oh, the Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi,
it's
sorry.
Pretty big.
It's pretty big. I mean, I see Wi-Fi in the sense of you connect to the Wi-Fi, some places will have a password, like this place here. They have one with a password, one without a password, and then you're going to somewhere they don't have the client isolation.
That's a big one, right?
Oh, yeah. Especially when you say it's someone pop up and go, hey, look at all the different devices you can see on your network.
Yeah, you can open up like your file share on your Mac and you see, oh, Janet in room whatever is sharing her Mac. Would you like to access it? It's crazy how open some of our devices are. Oh. If there's no client isolation, it's not very secure.
It's not very secure. And then you're teaching your users, you've got to fire up that VPN. And they're like, man, I don't want to do that because you're going to see everything that I do.
It slows down my Netflix. And
And this is the problem that you have. People need to educate that Wi-Fi, you got to look at where you're connecting, what you're connecting to, because you never know who's in the next room. It could be me, my little white cable connected to my laptop.
Exactly. From your many, many Wi-Fi pineapples,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
You make sure I'm not connected to GoGo in flight here. And so you mentioned like the hotel we're at, they have an open network and they also have one that's password protected. It's using WPA2, but that's not actually like, it's a bit of a misnomer that it's secure, because with WPA2, yes, the connection is technically encrypted, but everyone's session key is derived from that shared public key, which means since I know what the password is for the Wi-Fi, I can still decrypt your connection, even if I just capture the packets of you in the other room. It's not really more secure.
Yeah.
That's where things like WPA2 Enterprise comes in, where everyone has their own unique key, their own unique logins, or that's why it's so important. But still not really practical for a hotel, which is why VPNs are such a critical thing to use, right?
Oh, definitely. I mean, nowadays, if you look at the type of VPN technologies you can get, you got SSL, you can use IKE2, L2TP, you know, they're the ones. I mean, IKE2 is so fast.
It is.
Yeah.
And a lot of, like, especially mobile devices and laptops all have built-in clients for it too, right?
Yeah. Nowadays, I recommend a lot of my partners to actually embrace the IKE2 functionality, or if they're not into the IKE2, go with the SSL and then use the multi-factor authentication on it, because that's even better.
Right.
Because you're actually making sure you know who's actually connecting and you know that is that real person. So definitely always embrace that. And the ease of it now. I remember the days when you used to use it like an RSA
yes,
file.
Little hard token.
Hard token. I used to do the support where people say, can you change my PIN to 1234? And you go, no,
what?
I can't. And they go, why do you want to change to 1234? Because I've etched the PIN on the back of the actual fob.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember those days.
Oh, that breaks my soul.
I had to support people like that. So, you know, nowadays, obviously, with the way that, like, with our MFA is so simple, the push. Oh, I mean, I have the wearable, I have the watch, bang, click, I'm in. It just makes it simple.
And it's more secure. Like, not all two-factor is created the same.
No.
Like, SMS-based two-factor, it's good if you don't have any other option, but it's not as secure as it could be. We saw it was Reddit, like, last year, midway through the year. Reddit had a compromise, even though they were using two-factor authentication for their developer accounts. The problem was someone, A, got a hold of their developer's password, whether it be from a breach or just an insecure Oopsie. Password. But then they went and cloned their SIM card, or got T-Mobile or AT&T or whoever to add another line and port over their number, which meant they were able to pass SMS-based two-factor authentication because they received the text. And they went in there and they dumped all their source code and a lot of their user data as well from this one breach.
Wow.
Even though they were using two-factor, because it was SMS-based, someone was able to social engineer the cell phone company, steal their number, and then steal their SMS messages, including that token. So that's why push-based ones like our app are so important, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you even want to get even more secure, the QR code one. Man, that is really cool.
And it's great for offline access too.
Yeah.
Where when you're trying to log into your computer or whatever, you type up, say, I'm offline, pop up the QR code, scan it with your phone.
And it really proves that you are who that person is and you have that device. There's no shadow of a doubt you are the right person.
Yep.
So definitely QR all the way, but push love.
And two factors, so important because, like, let's say we're connecting here over a hotel Wi-Fi. Maybe one of my applications is insecure and doesn't use encryption and I don't use a VPN because I'm lazy. Someone could sniff that password right out of the air. And if I'm not using two-factor authentication, they then have the keys to the kingdom for that account.
Not good.
No, not good at all. So what issues do, like, remote workers tend to encounter outside of, like, VPN access and Wi-Fi? Do they have, like, connectivity issues sometimes? Or what about, like, securing their devices remotely? Is there anything they can do to make sure they don't bring a virus back into the office?
Well, you know, you got to make sure that their devices are up to date with their virus and AV. AV, I mean, the days when people sit there going, oh, I have a Mac, I don't need virus.
Exactly.
I mean, everything can get a virus nowadays. So you need to have some good antivirus on your thing. But at the same time, you also have to have something that's monitoring the AV. Because remember, AVs are only as good as their signatures they get.
Right.
Admittedly, a lot of these AV vendors are now bringing in their threat detection responses and stuff like that. And they're trying to actually do everything and they're trying to be bloaty on the machines. But you need to make sure that you've got something that runs very lightweight, can see what's going on and protect the machine. But even if the machine is infected, don't allow it on your network. Shut it down. Let the user know that you've got something bad and we're not going to allow you to do anything more until you bring it back into the office. I know it's a pain, but trust me, I'd rather know that my data is safe and it's not being leaked out.
And we've got, like the TDR client can do host isolation if it detects, like, our threat detection response endpoint agent, where if it detects an infection and it has enough factors in order to flag it as something malicious, we actually have host isolation now where we prevent that client using Windows APIs or Mac APIs from even connecting back to the network if you do bring it in the office. It's pretty handy.
And it's so lightweight. Yeah. That's what gets me, like 65 megs on a machine.
That's nice.
It's nice. I mean, 65 megs. I remember when 65 megs would actually kill a machine. But I mean, this is cool. But yeah, it actually
back
works.
Back in the day when a 65 meg RAM chip cost like hundreds
of dollars. Don't take me there. Don't take me there.
And you mentioned AV. And one of the things is like signature-based AV isn't really good enough anymore as well. Like it's great at catching things quickly, like the stuff we know. But one of the things you like to point out, we have that threat landscape page on Secplicity.org where we track something called the zero-day malware number, which is the percentage of malware that bypasses signature-based AV because it uses packing or crypting or polymorphic code where it doesn't match a signature, even if it is a technically known piece of malware. And in the UK here, that number is pretty dang high most often, right?
Yeah. So Ollie, my other SE and myself, we've been monitoring this on the site, and we're actually seeing the 0 day normally swinging around about 75%. Were around 25 for signature based.
Right.
That's what we're seeing on our firewalls.
That's insane.
And we're not sure why the UK is so popular for 0 day. I mean, there could be many reasons.
That's way above our average for like the world. Like the last few quarters, it's been pretty low actually, like 27% in Q3 and then back up to, I think, just shy of 40% in Q4.
Well, I checked it today when I was on the stand. I was showing a customer, and it was 51 on 0 day and 29 on signature-based.
Right.
And the guy was like, whoa, I really need to actually look into this. And it's that's quite mild for us, but when we swing it the other way, you just...
Mild. Mild is half of all malware.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's
that's
just...
That's insane.
And we have seen it as high as 95 one day.
Jeez.
So
so people are like trying out all their new malware and polymorphic code over here before sending it on to the rest of the world.
I think they like Teresa. I think they really like her a lot. They're after her.
She's not very good with the cybers, is what you're saying?
Maybe not.
So what else are people in the UK concerned about? Like you mentioned device security too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have people out on the road, they have like three devices. These devices, they're either they're corporate ones or they're not corporate ones. So many times I see people say, my corporate, they give me this phone, I don't like it. They go and buy their own phone, but they put their own corporate data on there. So you need to make sure that that is also secured as well. Because, or that the other thing I'm seeing is IT companies, or I'm seeing IT going, well, there you go, that's your budget, go and buy your own laptop.
Oh,
bring your own devices back again. So
budget's a big issue.
Budget, especially with what's going on with the budgets, because people don't know what's happening. So they're going to say, well, we're not going to buy it, spend a whole load. So if you want to buy something and you want to use it, go and use it. But your mobile phone, your own contract, you pay it back, will give you a certain amount. And that's what we see now.
And there's a concern if you allow employees to use their own device and then bring it onto like the corporate network or connect back with a VPN, right? Because they could infect it and then bring something back into the office.
Or the other thing is when they go back into the office, how do they connect to the Wi-Fi? Which network do they connect to? Do you trust that device to actually connect to the corporate one, or should you put that on its own mobile network?
Our IT department sure doesn't trust me to connect to the corporate one.
I don't blame them. I'm lucky they don't let me connect when I walk into corporate either.
So what can people do about like securing their devices then, or what can companies do? Like, obviously, there's MDM solutions, mobile device management, which seem to have, they were really big during the whole BYOD buzzword days a few years ago. But
I think you've seen some of them disappear, you know, and you see the really good ones are left. Also, the other thing is be able to make sure that the devices aren't jailbroken.
Right. That's a big issue.
That's like a massive issue. Now, it's going to be the thing that you have to make sure, because if that thing is jailbroken, who knows what's on it?
Yeah. So jailbreaking allows you to what we call sideload applications. Instead of downloading something from the Apple Store or the Google Play Store, you can go to randomwebsite.com, download the application, and install it through like a USB cable, or sometimes even directly on the phone if it's jailbroken, bypassing all of the security protections that the main app stores have.
Yeah.
Like as much crap as we give Apple for having a very closed ecosystem, because of that, they have actually decent security where they vet apps that go on their store. Google does as well, but to somewhat of a lesser extent, they don't do as much hardcore vetting as Apple does. But it's still better than nothing. And when you sideload apps, you open yourself up to a whole world of pain if you don't know what you're dealing with.
I think if I remember, Corey would say, if it's free, it's not worth it, baby.
Yes, exactly.
Something along those lines.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Corey added baby on that as well. Yeah,
maybe we should just make him say baby more often.
And we actually saw, I'm trying to remember which campaign it was, but there was a recent Trojan campaign where they were focusing on paid applications like video games like Minecraft on your phone, which normally cost like $6 or $10. They would steal the application, make it free, but then install like a Trojan inside the same code and then put it up on their fake little app store. And oh yeah, and they were using valid certificates from these companies, like enterprise certificates. So they still somewhat looked legitimate. It made it easier to sideload. In some cases, you didn't even have to jailbreak your phone. But because people were downloading these apps from untrusted sources, they were still getting malware on their devices too. Pretty crazy.
That's, well, no, free lunch or syndrome. I mean,
exactly.
Definitely. But yeah. Oh, no good.
So, I mean, I was a kid. I remember trying to find wares and stuff because I didn't want to pay for a game.
Oh, the wares.
But there are general, like actual security concerns about doing this. This is how you get malware, by trying to download free stuff from places that are obviously less than legal and a little bit seedy.
Well, I got to say one thing. If the download has a Z in it, you knew it was safe.
Oh, yes. That's it. That's the way to tell if it's secure. So what do you think the biggest issue for like, or the biggest security concern going forward for the rest of the year is out of those we've talked about?
I think the biggest concern is, for me, is going to be phishing. Because phishing is it's not dying down.
No, because it keeps working.
Yeah. And they're even down to like the spear phishing, where they're really just going after that financial director. How you stop that financial director thinking, well, it's definitely got my name. It's from such and such. It looks relevant. Everything looks relevant. So I better pay it. I think people should also learn to pick up the phone as well. Maybe I'm just old school.
Yeah.
You know, if in doubt, check it out. You know, make sure that it's...
Hey, good slogan.
You well like done. That one? In doubt, check it out. But it's true. The problem is we're so used to only just communicating via email and believing everything we get on email. Man, I remember the days when you used to be able to send and do a town note onto an email server and say you were Bill Clinton and send the email to a friend of mine.
Still can.
Yeah, I know, but I just can't remember all the commands now. But, you know, these are the things.
Yeah.
So I say to people, you know, you should actually use your savvy. If you see something come through, make that phone call.
Especially if it's like critical, like a financial like billing form or something, someone saying you owe them like $10,000.
Yeah.
Check it out.
Definitely. Well, I know if it's anything like £100, I'm still going to check it out.
Right. So what can our users and our customers do? Obviously, training is a big part of this, right?
Training. I mean, look, you got to look at the email itself. Were you expecting that email? I mean, do you know that person? Maybe there's going to be a yes. Do they talk in the way that they normally talk to you?
Right.
Because, I mean, if you ever get an email from me, it's normally quite short and sweet. If you get a War and Peace email from me, you know it's not me. But even so, you need to also look at when you actually put your mouse over the link, you know,
right.
Look at the URL. You know,
is it actually going to AmericanExpress.com or is it going to totally not AmericanExpressBadWebsite.org?
Exactly. And if they're asking you for your PIN number, get out of there.
Right.
You know, there's no way the bank is going to go, oh, by the way, we forgot your password and we need your PIN number and your security code on the back of your credit card. I mean, gone to the days where you'd actually will sit there and actually, because they're going to put more malicious stuff on that web page as well. Yeah. But even so, if it doesn't look right, don't do it. And make that phone call and go, were you really meant to do that to me? So
that's what about technical protections? There's obviously tools out there that can quote unquote defang emails as well, like make links a little more safe.
Well, I mean, you've got like for us, we've got the DNS Watch where we'll redirect you to the site and educate the person. But the thing I like about the DNS Watch, which is so cool, it's a very simple way of we'll intercept the DNS, send that user back to a safe site, really, yep. And let them know that they went somewhere wrong. I've seen with other companies where they'll actually encapsulate that actual link. And actually then we'll change the link so that you can't click on it until they can actually verify that that site is actually safe. Hmm. So, but then don't get complacent. Just because you got that tech doesn't mean that you're always going to be safe, because sometimes they may just get through.
Yep.
Maybe a brand new website that no one knows about and you're that person that clicked on that link. And so always check out that URL. massively.
Exactly, which goes back to training, making sure users know how to spot phishing emails, know what to look out for, the obvious red flags, so that they may not be perfect, but it's better than nothing, right?
Oh, yeah. You educate the users. They're going to be your weakness, so train them good.
And don't beat them.
Well, I don't know if they're naughty.
Well, thank you, Martin, very much for this interview. I appreciate it, and I hope to see you in the States sometime soon, too.
Me too, dude. I look forward to coming. Thank you very much.
Cheers. Hey, everyone. Thanks again for listening. As always, if you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. If you have any questions about today's topic or suggestions for future topics, you can find me on Twitter at @XORRO_. Corey is at @SecAdept, or all of us are together at #The443Podcast. Thank you again for listening, and we will see you next week. Cheerio.
Bye-bye.